Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news across San Diego's inland region. Today, our first quarter hour will be devoted to some important national news. We'll have our analysis and highlights of President Joe Biden's State of the Union speech, highlighting his administration's achievements and goals for the future. We'll also have excerpts from the Republican response to that State of the Union message, delivered by Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And from Public News Service, we'll have updates on those mysterious flying objects being shot down in U.S. airspace, the latest place where yet another classified document has turned up, and controversy over whether Social Security should be on the chopping block or not during discussions over raising the nation's debt limit. Next, we'll have some top local news stories, including Sweetwater Water Authority's controversial decision to drain Loveland Reservoir in Alpine for a second time, even after extreme draining contributed to destruction of a floating fishing dock and massive erosion near the Loveland Dam. Plus, hear why bond money, approved by taxpayers for dam repairs in the Sweetwater District, got spent on other projects. If you shop for medications in Mexican pharmacies, be sure to listen up to a health warning today. A San Diego Union-Tribune investigation found popular medicines sold over-the-counter in pharmacies in Tijuana and other Mexican cities were laced with deadly fentanyl and methamphetamines. This includes painkillers like opioids, as well as some medications used by children. We'll have a report on the latest Lemon Grove City Council meeting, where the community honored the memory of a former councilman who passed away. The mayor announced an award for fiscal responsibility won by the city, and the council heard testimony urging preservation of historic murals commemorating the Lemon Grove incident, a landmark school desegregation case. Supervisor Nathan Fletcher has announced he is running for the state Senate seat being vacated by Tony Atkins, and how a vacancy on the Board of Supervisors could be filled if Fletcher wins his race to return to the state legislature. Hear what his platform includes on today's show. The California Public Utilities Commission is probing those soaring natural gas prices, and we'll have details from California News Service. Nora Vargas is the new chair of the County Board of Supervisors, and she recently delivered her State of the County message. We'll have highlights from her speech on today's show. Now, if you spend a lot of hours, like I do, staring at video screens, your vision could be impacted. Learn more on today's show from California News Service. The County of San Diego has approved a pilot program to offer rent subsidies to seniors at risk of becoming homeless. Learn who qualifies on today's show. Downtown El Cajon, the business group that puts on festivals and events for the city of El Cajon, has settled a lawsuit alleging open government violations and agreed to open its meetings up to the public. The county is hosting a Love Your Heart event at the Ramona Library on February 25th, where you can get blood pressure tests and kits to take home, heart health information, and more. We'll have full details later on today. And there's some good news to wrap up our show. Monarch butterflies are back in droves, with a major population increase as they migrate their way across California to Mexico. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
U.S. President Joe Biden gave his State of the Union address in early February, celebrating American accomplishment since the pandemic in one of the world's most resilient, if not the most resilient, economy.
So let's look at the results. We're not finished yet by any stretch of the imagination, but unemployment rate is at 3.4%, a 50-year low.
Also calling attention to Hispanic and African-American economic gains.
Near-record unemployment for Black and Hispanic workers.
He spoke of democracy in broad terms before alluding to the insurrection and violent attack against Mr. Pelosi.
There's one reason why we've been able to do all of these things, our democracy itself. It's the most fundamental thing of all. With democracy, everything's possible. Without it, nothing is.
But this job creation is only the beginning, says the president. We're just getting started, as he hopes the Bipartisan CHIP Act and following a 1933 Buy American law will help boost these hiring numbers and stunning job growth of the last few months into the next 2 years and beyond.
Tonight, I'm announcing new standards require all construction materials used in federal infrastructure projects to be made in America. We all saw what happened during the pandemic when chip factories shut down overseas. Today's automobiles need 3,000 chips, each of those automobiles. But American automobiles couldn't make enough cars because there weren't enough chips. Car prices went up, people got laid off. So did everything from refrigerators to cell phones. We can never let that happen again. That's why we came together to pass the Bipartisan CHIPS and Science Act.
The American president praised his predecessor, George W. Bush, and acknowledged singer-songwriter Bono for their fight against HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, in places among Africa, and calls for equal effort in the battle against various forms of cancer.
Let this be a truly American moment that rallies the country and the world together and prove that we can still do big things.
Biden opposes cuts to Social Security and Medicare, and during heckling, tried to bait Republicans into the same commitment during looming debt ceiling negotiations.
My administration has cut the deficit by more than $1.7 trillion, the largest deficit reduction in American history. Under the previous administration, the American deficit went up 4 years in a row. Because those record deficits, no president added more to the national debt in any 4 years than my predecessor. Nearly 25% of the entire national debt that took over 200 years to accumulate was added by just one administration alone, the last one. They're the facts. Check it out. How did Congress respond to that debt? They did the right thing. They lifted the debt ceiling 3 times without preconditions or crisis. They paid American bills to prevent an economic disaster in the country. So tonight I'm asking the Congress to follow suit. Let's commit here tonight to the full faith and credit of the United States of America will never, ever be questioned. So some of my Republican friends want to take the economy hostage. I get it, unless I agree to their economic plans. All of you at home should know what those plans are. Instead of making the wealthy pay their fair share, some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset. I'm not saying it's a majority. Let me give you, anybody who doubts it, contact my office. I'll give you a copy of the proposal. That means Congress doesn't vote. Well, I'm glad to see you. Now, I tell you, I enjoy conversion. You know, it means if Congress doesn't keep the programs the way they are, they'd go away. Other Republicans say, I'm not saying it's a majority of you. I don't even think it's even a significant. But it's being proposed by individuals. I'm not politely not naming them, but it's being proposed by some of you. Look, folks. The idea is that we're not going to be moved into being threatened to default on the debt if we don't respond. Folks, so folks, as we all apparently agree, Social Security and Medicare is off the books now, right? They're not to be stopped. All right. We got unanimity. Social Security and Medicare are a lifeline for millions of seniors. Americans have to pay into them from the very first paycheck they started. So tonight, let's all agree, and apparently we are, let's stand up for seniors. up and show them. We'll not cut Social Security. We will not cut Medicare. Those benefits belong to the American people. They earned it. And if anyone tries to cut Social Security, which apparently no one's going to do, and if anyone tries to cut Medicare, I'll stop them. I'll veto it.
He acknowledged the pain many communities have faced over the last few decades as American manufacturing jobs moved overseas.
For decades, the middle class has been hollowed out in more than, and not no one administration, but for a long time. Too many good-paying manufacturing jobs move overseas. Factories closed down. Once thriving cities and towns that many of you represent became shadows of what they used to be. And along the way, something else we lost. Pride. Our sense of self-worth. I ran for president to fundamentally change things, to make sure our economy works for everyone, so we can all feel that pride in what we do. To build an economy from the bottom up and the middle out, not from the top down. Because when the middle class does well, the poor have a ladder up, and the wealthy still do very well. We all do well.
Biden assures us things are getting better, and they have been getting better over the course of the last 2 years.
And those who bet against America are learning how wrong they are. It's never, ever been a good bet to bet against America. Never.
Biden spoke of seeking competition rather than conflict with China.
Before I came to office, the story was about how the People's Republic of China was increasing its power and America was failing in the world. Not anymore. We made clear, and I made clear in my personal conversations, which have been many, with President Xi, that we seek competition, not conflict. But I will make no apologies that we're investing in to make America stronger. Investing in American innovation and industries that will define the future that China intends to be dominating. Investing in our alliances and working with our allies to protect advanced technologies so they will not be used against us. Modernizing our military to safeguard stability and deter aggression. Today, we're in the strongest position in decades to compete with China or anyone else in the world. Anyone else in the world.
And the American president spoke about Putin's war in Ukraine.
I spoke in this chamber 1 year ago, just days after Vladimir Putin unleashed his brutal attack against Ukraine. A murderous assault, evoking images of death and destruction Europe suffered in World War II. Putin's invasion has been a test for the ages, a test for America, a test for the world. Would we stand for the most basic of principles? Would we stand for sovereignty? Would we stand for the right of people to live free of tyranny? Would we stand for the defense of democracy? For such defense matters to us because it keeps peace and prevents open season on would-be aggressors and threatens our prosperity. 1 year later, we know the answer. Yes, we would, and we did. We did. And together, we did what America always does at our best. We led. We united NATO. We built a global coalition. We stood against Putin's aggression. We stood with the Ukrainian people. Tonight, we're once again joined by Ukraine's ambassador to the United States. She represents not just her nation, but the courage of her people.
Biden wants profitable companies and wealthy Americans to, quote, pay their fair share.
We pay for these investments in our future by finally making the wealthiest and biggest corporations begin to pay their fair share.
President Joe Biden opposes paying for policy proposals on the backs of those earning under $400,000 a year.
Under my plans, as long as I'm president, nobody earning less than $400,000 will pay an additional penny in taxes. Nobody, not one penny.
President Biden says the contrasts are sharp and that we are not bystanders of history, but we, the people, are facing the test of our time.
My fellow Americans, we meet tonight at an inflection point, one of those moments that only a few generations ever face, where the direction we now take is going to decide the course of this nation for decades to come. We're not bystanders of history. We're not powerless before the forces that confront us. It's within our power of we, the people. We're facing a test of our time. We have to be the nation we've always been at our best, optimistic, hopeful, forward-looking. A nation that embraces light over dark, hope over fear, unity over division, stability over chaos. We have to see each other not as enemies, but as fellow Americans. We're good people. The only nation in the world built on an idea. The only one.
Reporting for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Republican rebuttal to President Joe Biden's State of the Union speech was delivered by Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, former press secretary under President Donald Trump. Huckabee Sanders called for a new generation of Republican leadership. She faulted Biden's age, slammed Democrats on inflation and critical race theory. Despite Biden's record of job growth and a strengthening economy, Huckabee Sanders claimed Biden and Democrats haven't done enough.
From out-of-control inflation and violent crime to the dangerous border crisis and threat from China, Biden and the Democrats have failed you.
She accused Biden of surrendering to a woke mob.
I'm the first woman to lead my state, and he's the first man to surrender his presidency to a woke mob that can't even tell you what a woman is.
The woke mob statement was ironic, given that it was Trump who faces a criminal investigation for inciting an actual mob that attacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, killing several people and injuring dozens of police officers. Republican legislators in the audience interrupted the president's speech with jeers and boos in the most open display of rudeness seen at any State of the Union speech in modern times. Despite this, Huckabee Sanders stated,
"The dividing line in America is no longer between right or left. The choice is between normal or crazy."
And she claimed Democrats are the crazies. Democrats, by contrast, have used the term crazy to refer to a growing number of extremist office holders among Republicans, such as Marjorie Taylor Greene praising political violence and claiming the California wildfires were started by Jewish space lasers, or the serial lies told by Congressman George Santos over his education, job history, false claims of Holocaust family ties, and more. Huckabee Sanders concluded that Biden is unfit to serve as commander-in-chief, despite the fact that her own former boss, Donald Trump, was twice impeached, had his company found guilty of tax fraud, and is now the target of multiple criminal investigations, including his role in the Capitol armed insurrection and his efforts to pressure Georgia election officials to falsely report that he won the 2020 election. Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Canadian and American fighter jets were scrambled, and an American F-22 successfully shot down the object.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau confirms that the U.S. military shot down an unidentified object over one of the Great Lakes Sunday morning. This follows a similar incident the day before over Canada's Yukon Territory and another the day before that off the coast of Alaska. On Friday, Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski said the U.S. needs to send a clear message that it won't tolerate these intrusions.
The message was very important today to say any aspect of U.S. sovereign territory that is encroached upon, there's going to be consequences to it.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York described the unidentified objects as balloons, suggesting they resemble the one shot down off the Carolina coast. The FBI discovered an additional classified document at former Vice President Mike Pence's Indiana home during a voluntary search Friday. This comes weeks after Pence first reported having discovered a small number of classified documents at his residence. In a Sunday interview on CNN, Republican Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota said most GOP lawmakers don't agree with Florida Senator Rick Scott's plan to sunset Medicare and Social Security. Rounds says Social Security funding is like that of the Department of Defense. He doesn't see Congress stopping either.
We're never going to not fund defense. But at the same time, every single year, we look at how we can make it better. And I think it's about time that we start talking about Social Security and making it better.
President Biden met with a bipartisan group of governors and repeated many of the messages delivered in last week's State of the Union. Utah Governor Spencer Cox says they also talked about how states will implement bipartisan legislation, including the infrastructure law, the Inflation Reduction Act, and the CHIPS and Science Act.
I want to give the president credit as well. He's taking victory laps, as we all would, for getting major legislation passed, but he really wants to see this done and moving.
Cox adds there were serious discussions about securing the southern border, as well as getting a better handle on the fentanyl crisis. President Biden met with newly reelected Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva to reset better relations. He says they want to fight climate change together and protect democracy in both countries.
We're the two largest democracies in the hemisphere. Brazil, the United States, stand together. We reject political violence, and we put great value in our democratic institutions.
The meeting comes just over a month after what's been called Brazil's January 6th. Supporters of former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro stormed the Congress, Supreme Court, and the presidential palace there, demanding the military remove Lula from office. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Despite heavy rains in January that have alleviated severe drought concerns, Sweetwater Water Authority on January 26th announced that it has initiated a new transfer of water from Loveland Reservoir in Alpine to Sweetwater Reservoir in the Spring Valley Otay area. The new draining of the reservoir comes after a controversial water transfer begun in November drained Loveland down to deadpool status for the first time in the district's history. Raising concerns over negative impacts on wildlife, firefighting resources, and loss of recreational use, including fishing, hiking, and bird watching. And now, last month, heavy rains caused major damage to a floating fish dock, as well as substantial erosion and debris washed down to the dam. Now, Sweetwater Water Authority has announced that due to safety concerns, the recreation program at Loveland Reservoir is closed until further notice. The water district said it will be assessing damage and need for repairs. Darlene Casso, board member and spokesperson for the newly formed Friends of Loveland Reservoir, told East County Magazine, Friends of Loveland Reservoir would like to collaborate with Sweetwater Authority to propose solutions to the repeated draining of the lake. We believe we have various options which will benefit community members, the environment, wildlife that depends on Loveland, and Sweetwater Authority and its customers, she says. Friends of Loveland Reservoir, a group formed to protect the lake, posted a call to action on its Facebook page, urging residents upset over the closure of the lake and repeated draining to contact their elected officials at all levels. January rains had refilled about half of the water that Sweetwater drained at Loveland in November and December, when it dropped the level from minimum pool level to deadpool status. Those rains raised hopes among recreational users and environmentalists that the lake might recover from the severe draining, when some feared it never would. But the second draining has dashed those hopes, and critics contend that the district's newest draining was unnecessary as well as destructive. Now, California's drought is not over, but the San Diego region has seen its drought level lowered to moderate drought status, the second lowest level in the state's 5-level ranking of drought conditions. So if a second draining isn't immediately needed to meet the district's water supply needs, why did the Sweetwater Authority choose a second extreme draining without regard to killing off fish, birds, or other wildlife? Why didn't the district care about concerns of residents over firefighters forced to go to lakes farther away for water to fight fires, or about the recreational value for fishermen, birdwatchers, and hikers? In a statement to ratepayers, Sweetwater's general manager Carlos Quintero claims that despite recent heavy rains, after 4 years of dry weather patterns, we are still in need of water. Sweetwater Reservoir is below 40% capacity. These transfers are standard operational practices that we conduct to secure the water supply for our customers, he claims. Critics contend the district's decision to decimate Loveland Reservoir is all about the money. The district estimates that the two transfers will save $11 million for Sweetwater ratepayers by avoiding the cost of purchasing water from other sources, something many other districts do. Russell Walsh, an avid fisherman and activist who has become the district's most vocal critic over its actions at Loveland, blames closure of the lake squarely on Loveland's draining of the reservoir to such low levels. He notes that the district's demand for water has actually gone down sharply in recent years, despite the drought, due to investment in a desalination plant. Walsh blames the extreme draining of the lake for massive erosion and debris that's flowed down to Loveland Dam, as well as for destruction of a floating fishing dock paid for by federal tax dollars. Walsh states, "They screw up, we pay," and in Sweetwater's words, indefinitely. With the reservoir now closed to the public indefinitely due to safety concerns, Walsh observes, in 75 years, the lake never became dangerous before. Besides public access, another concern is dam safety. Even before damage from the winter rains, a state assessment on dam safety found Loveland and Sweetwater reservoirs, both operated by the Sweetwater District, to be in satisfactory condition but with a high hazard level for potential loss of life or property. A bond measure passed by Sweetwater's ratepayers included money to be used for several projects, including dam repair, but the district spent the money on projects other than its dams, even though the bond measure was backed by the director of the state's Division of Dam Safety. Sweetwater contends that final design plans for improvements to Sweetwater Dam are pending and won't be completed until October 24th, but there is still no plan for repairs at Loveland Dam, nor even a full assessment of the new damage, and bond funds have been expended on other projects. Walsh calls the district's response irresponsible, and he has called for an audit of bond fund expenditures. Walsh concludes, "The water district has killed most, if not all, fish, and has a policy of draining water whenever there is any to take. How can there ever be fishing?" Worse, he predicts, the constant filling and draining the lake to deadpool status, as the district seems hell-bent to do, in his words, will create a vicious cycle, threatening wildlife from birds to mountain lions that have come to rely on Loveland Reservoir as a life-sustaining water source. The problem points up an inherent inequity in the local water supply system. The people who care most about saving Loveland Reservoir and Alpine, its neighbors and outdoor enthusiasts in the area, cannot vote for the directors of the Sweetwater Water Authority, who are elected by South Bay voters and thus not beholden to the people who love Loveland. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Health Alert. Pharmacies in Tijuana and other Mexican cities are selling counterfeit medicines laced with deadly fentanyl and methamphetamines, according to investigations conducted by the Los Angeles Times and by researchers from the University of California, Los Angeles. The tainted fake drugs ranged from narcotic pain pills to pills often used to treat children with attention deficit disorder. San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen warns that these potentially lethal pills are being, quote, passed off as legitimate medicine in Tijuana and other tourist areas. Please be careful if you travel to Mexico, end quote. According to the Los Angeles Times, its reporters found that in Tijuana, pills sold as oxycodone, a prescription narcotic, tested positive for fentanyl. Pills sold as Adderall, a drug used to treat attention deficit disorder, contained methamphetamine. Out of 17 pills tested at multiple pharmacies in Tijuana, 71% tested positive for more powerful drugs than represented. Dangerous, illegal drugs were also found in pharmacies in other northern Mexico cities. Fentanyl is 50 to 100 times stronger than heroin, according to San Diego County Health and Human Services. A dose as small as 2 milligrams, smaller than a grain of sand, can kill a person. Last June, San Diego County supervisors declared a public health crisis due to fentanyl deaths. At least 743 people died of fentanyl in 2021, quadruple the number in 2019. Fentanyl accounted for 70% of all overdoses countywide in 2021. In December, supervisors approved a plan to combat fentanyl deaths locally, including making naloxone nasal spray widely available to help reverse overdoses. But a growing number of people who overdose aren't even aware that they have ingested fentanyl, which is often found laced in both street drugs such as heroin, as well as counterfeit forms of prescription medication. Fentanyl is now being manufactured in Mexico with ingredients from China and India. The phony pills typically resemble real prescription medications, and they're proving highly lucrative for smugglers and drug cartels. The discovery of fentanyl and other street drugs in pharmacies just over the border is a deadly new twist in sales of fentanyl, which is also sold illicitly not only on the streets here in the U.S., but also online via websites, social media, and other means. Many Americans as well as Mexican citizens living in the U.S. have long crossed the border to buy legitimate medications that they can't afford in the U.S., or to get pain medications over the counter after a doctor cuts off prescribing narcotics for pain. U.S. tourists and others buying medicine in Mexico have long believed pills sold in Mexican pharmacies were safe, but that's an assumption that could now prove deadly.
This is Susan Taylor with a local government report from Lemon Grove. At the Lemon Grove City Council meeting on February 7th, former City Council member Tom Clabby was remembered as doing good for Lemon Grove during his 14 years on the City Council and his deep love for the community. Clabby passed away on January 22, 2023, surrounded by friends and family. Clabby was the city's representative on MTS. He also served on the Planning Commission and on the Lemon Grove School Board. He has been credited with leading efforts to get the new library in Lemon Grove. During public comments, community members urged the council to preserve murals depicting the 1931 school segregation case known as the Lemon Grove Incident. The murals wrap around a building formerly occupied by the Welcome Home Boutique, a resale store run by the Minority Humanitarian Foundation to benefit refugees. But the store closed abruptly after a scandal arose regarding the nonprofit's CEO, who was accused in online posts of grooming a young adult for online sex work. The Minority Humanitarian Foundation released a statement that Lane is no longer affiliated with their organization. Lane could not be reached for comments. Speakers at the council meeting included Dr. Robert Alvarez, son of the lead plaintiff in the historic 1931 school segregation case that the mural depicts. Dr. Alvarez said the city manager has been working to ensure that the new renters will protect and conserve both the school case and the Lemon Pickers murals. Mario Chacon, the artist who created the mural, said both the California Protection Act and the Visual Artists' Rights Act protect public art. In addition, Laurel Hook, president of the Lemon Grove Historical Society, testified in support of the project protecting the mural, stating it is important to keep the history of Lemon Grove alive. The city council manager voiced concern that new tenants have moved into the building illegally and that the city is looking at several courses of action. The council also heard a presentation from Lieutenant Patrick McAvoy from the Lemon Grove Sheriff's Station on the dangers of fentanyl and the opioid crisis. The lieutenant introduced the newly launched harm reduction kits, now available free to the public without prescription. The kits, which include two doses of Narcan nasal spray to counteract overdoses, are available free at the Lemon Grove Sheriff's Station or by asking any deputy. The kits are funded by opioid settlement funds from a lawsuit against pharmaceutical companies. Mayor Raquel Vasquez announced that the City of Lemon Grove received the Government Finance Officers Association Distinguished Budget Award for the current fiscal year. Mayor Vasquez said the city has never received an award for good financial budgeting, and it's significant because it's an outside agency who says, Lemon Grove, you're doing things right.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
An ice storm in January caused major damage to KNSJ's antenna high atop Monument Peak on Mount Laguna, knocking this station off the radio airways. If you're listening to our show today on the internet live stream, please donate to help get us back on the air in San Diego and East County. You can make a donation at knsj.org. And thank you for your support of local nonprofit media. We represent your interests, the public interest, not special interests. Supervisor Nathan Fletcher has announced he's running for the 39th State Senate District seat. The former chairman of the San Diego County Board of Supervisors, who represents parts of East County and San Diego, aims to fill the legislative seat being vacated by political powerhouse Tony Atkins due to term limits. Atkins is the president pro tem of the state Senate and formerly served as speaker of the state assembly. Fletcher previously served in the state assembly and is also a former combat Marine decorated for valor under enemy fire. He also founded a veterans foundation to help vets struggling with PTSD, as well as deported immigrant veterans and other veterans in need. In a campaign video, Fletcher stressed a key lesson he learned in his military service.
I learned a really important lesson early in my time in the Marine Corps. We were at our cold weather survival school high in the mountains, freezing temperature, constant snow, only cold food. And then one day what appeared to be a large Humvee on snow track started making its way up the mountain towards us. Word spread quickly that they were bringing hot food. Our spirits soared. But there was only one truck, and there was no way there would be enough food for everyone there. The word went out to get in line to eat by rank, and my spirits plummeted. As the lowest ranking enlisted Marine there, I knew they'd run out of food before I had a turn in line. But to my surprise, I was directed to the front. You see, in the United States Marine Corps, when you get in line to eat by rank, the lowest ranking Marines eat first, the officers eat last. We take care of those we're responsible for, the hardest working individuals are recognized and put forward. I'm running for the California State Senate to bring that same approach, that same leadership lesson the Marine Corps taught me, to state government, to make sure we're looking out for the hardest working members of our society first.
Fletcher says working families are facing incredible economic challenges and need a fighter in Sacramento. He touts his leadership from leading Marines in combat to leading one of the nation's most effective COVID responses here in San Diego, adding, quote, "I've never shied away from taking on the toughest fights," end quote. He says he's running for state Senate to bring higher wages, a lower cost of living, and a fair shot at a better life that families deserve. While in the assembly, Fletcher was best known for authoring Chelsea's Law, a landmark measure named after murdered local teen Chelsea King. The law implemented measures to protect children from sexually violent crimes. In the assembly, he also authored over 30 bills that became law to expand healthcare coverage, protect homeowners from foreclosure, and make college more affordable. Fletcher has shown an independent streak at times, as well as a willingness to stand up for what he believes is right. He stood up against the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on LGBTQ soldiers before the Supreme Court overturned the policy as unconstitutional while he was still a Republican. He became an independent and later a Democrat, which led some to criticize Fletcher as an opportunist, though he changed parties because the Republican Party left him. Fletcher ran unsuccessfully for mayor of San Diego before winning election as supervisor in 2018. He served as chair during the COVID-19 pandemic, one of the most turbulent times in our region's history. Under Fletcher's leadership as chair of the County Board of Supervisors, San Diego County attained a 90% vaccination rate for COVID. The county declared a homelessness emergency and increased resources to help homeless people and build affordable housing. Supervisors with Fletcher at the helm also strengthened the county's climate action plan and adopted a community choice energy program to provide consumers alternatives to buying power from SDG&E. The county also increased behavioral services by 70% to address mental illness problems, declared a public emergency due to fentanyl overdoses, banned unregistered homemade ghost guns, and moved towards legalizing and regulating cannabis dispensaries. Not everyone has agreed with Fletcher's approaches. Vocal critics frequently disrupted supervisorial meetings to oppose COVID-19 policies, for example. Though a Democrat, Fletcher has shown willingness to reach across the aisle to Republican supervisors Joel Anderson and Jim Desmond at times. Anderson has called Fletcher a, quote, "great partner to me and for my constituents," end quote, on issues such as shutting down illegal marijuana dispensaries, strengthening wildlife protection, and working to reduce homelessness, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. On the other hand, Fletcher has been decidedly progressive, notably on labor issues. Fletcher's wife, Lorena Gonzalez Fletcher, is the California Labor Secretary and a former state legislator who championed major but sometimes controversial pro-worker measures. Fletcher has amassed over $1 million so far to fund his campaign, giving him a strong edge over any other potential candidates in the solidly blue Democratic district. It's not yet clear who may square off against Fletcher in a primary or general election for the state Senate seat. The sprawling district includes not only coastal communities from Imperial Beach to Solana Beach, but also central San Diego, east to San Carlos, the college area around SDSU, and portions of North County, including Escondido. If Fletcher wins election to the state Senate, it would create a vacancy on the County Board of Supervisors midway through his four-year term of office. Under board policy, supervisors may vote to fill the vacancy either by appointment or by a special election. The board might have difficulty agreeing on an appointee, however, since without Fletcher, the Board of Supervisors would have two Democrats and two Republicans. If a special election is called, expect well-funded candidates on both sides to emerge, with a balance of power on the board at stake. The district does have a strong Democratic advantage, and in 2022, Fletcher soundly defeated challenger Amy Reichart, a conservative activist and anti-vax, anti-masking advocate during the pandemic. Fletcher won nearly two-thirds of the vote. Candidates could come from anywhere in the recently redrawn 4th Supervisor District. It includes the East County cities of La Mesa and Lemon Grove, as well as the unincorporated areas of Casa de Oro, Crest, Dehesa, Mount Helix, Rancho San Diego, and Spring Valley. The district also includes many San Diego communities, ranging from eastern San Diego communities such as Rolando, Encanto, and the College area, north to Claremont and Kearney Mesa, as well as landmark communities such as Old Town, Mission Valley, and North Park. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Gas bills jumped by hundreds of dollars over the past few months for many Californians, and on Tuesday, the California Public Utilities Commission held a hearing to find out why. Some of the reasons cited? High demand during cold weather, and the failure of utilities to store enough gas for the winter or hedge against problems with interstate pipelines. Heidi Harmon, former mayor of San Luis Obispo, applauds Governor Gavin Newsom's call for a federal investigation into possible market manipulation.
Why did gas prices go up so much in such a short period of time? What's really going on there? And what is the remedy and who needs to be held accountable?
Prices are now coming down, but the CPUC said the price of natural gas on the West Coast peaked in December at 8 times what people in the southeastern U.S. were paying. The agency voted to accelerate a tax credit for millions of Californians that will take $90 to $120 off their gas bills in March. Dominic Frangillo, executive director of the group Elected Officials to Protect America, is convinced that the best way to protect people's pocketbooks and the climate is to transition away from oil and natural gas.
Fossil fuel industry volatility and collusion in many cases is causing prices to spike. The only way to end this is to accelerate our transition to 100% clean energy.
More than 440 California elected officials have signed an open letter to the governor asking for a plan to phase out oil and gas production in the state. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
County Board of Supervisors Chairwoman Nora Vargas gave her first State of the County address during an evening presentation earlier in February. The chairwoman's niece and goddaughter Fatima acted as MC and told the audience that her aunt represents several firsts. For the first time in nearly 200 years, the County of San Diego has the first woman of color, first immigrant, first fronteriza, and first Latina acting as chair of the Board of Supervisors. During her address, Chairwoman Vargas talked about the county's accomplishments, but said there is still a lot of work to do to build healthier and stronger communities, create paths to economic prosperity, and enhance community infrastructure.
Tonight is about us, the greater community of San Diego County. And so as your board chair, I want you to know that I see you and I hear you. And I'm going to work to make sure that all corners of our community feel seen and heard. I'm talking about the parents, the neighbors, the essential workers, the small business owners, the promotoras, our first responders.
Throughout her speech, the chairwoman stressed the importance of working together to overcome the region's challenges. Fargas says we need to start with the basics, food and shelter, and talked about what the county is doing to help those who are homeless or at risk. The chairwoman said she is committed to providing healthy food in food deserts and increasing the number of community gardens at county facilities. Chairwoman Vargas also outlined a wide variety of proposals to provide child care for all, stable housing for working families, increased mental health services, and additional funding for local businesses. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
Americans spend almost 13 hours a day using digital devices, and experts say it has the potential to strain your eyes and lead to serious health problems down the road. Blue light comes from the sun, but also from digital screens, and some medical professionals say too much of it can lead to scratchy or itchy eyes, tearing up, problems focusing, and headaches. Dr. Scott Edmonds is Chief Eye Care Officer for United Healthcare Vision. He recommends the 20-20-20 rule. Every 20 minutes, look away from the screen at something 20 feet away for at least 20 seconds.
It takes you away from the blue light so your retina can recycle. It also takes the strain off your convergence muscles, the muscles that turn your eyes in to keep them focused on the screen. When you look at 20 feet, your focusing goes to rest. Your converging muscles go to their resting point, and you get 20 seconds away from the blue light.
He also recommends that adults starting in their 20s should get a baseline eye exam so you can measure changes in the future. Ultraviolet light is damaging to the retina, and over time it is thought to contribute to age-related macular degeneration. Edmonds says experts are concerned that blue light may be just as damaging.
Blue, we always thought, was safe because it's visible. It may also be causative because it's so high energy and because these new sources emit such high levels of the blue light.
Dr. Raj Maturi with the American Academy of Ophthalmology advises frequent breaks from the screen and turning it off well before bedtime to improve sleep.
We get tired, our brain is not trying to slow down, and we don't sleep well. An excess amount of blue light at night can also decrease the amount of melatonin that our body produces and therefore affect how quickly and how easily we fall asleep.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The County of San Diego's Department of Homeless Solutions and Equitable Communities is launching a pilot program to provide a rent subsidy to 222 seniors at risk of experiencing homelessness. This program was approved by the Board of Supervisors last September. Eligible adults over 55 years old would be provided with $500 a month for 18 months to help them stabilize their situation. Assistance payments are anticipated to start this spring. San Diego's population of people over age 55 is expected to balloon to over 1.1 million people by 2030. Barbara Jimenez, Community Operations Officer who oversees the Department of Homeless Solutions and Equitable Communities, says older adults in particular, people on fixed incomes, are struggling with rising rents and represent a growing part of our homeless population. She adds, this pilot program will help people remain in their homes while also offering light case management services to connect participants to supportive services. Now, according to last year's point-in-time count of unsheltered people, 25% of those who were unsheltered were seniors age 55 and up. Eligible applicants must have a household income at or below 50% of the area's median household income. They must be using over half their income toward housing, have their name on the lease or rental agreement, and have a landlord willing to participate in this program. Applicants cannot be receiving any other rental subsidies, and they must sign a consent form to participate in the program. Pilot program participants who meet the eligibility criteria will be selected at random. To apply for this rental subsidy, call 619-980-4168. Application assistance and translation services will be provided. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's Local Government Update, reporting from El Cajon. Downtown El Cajon Business Partners is settling a lawsuit over Brown Act violations, according to testimony presented at the El Cajon City Council meeting on January 24th.
We have settled with them. They have agreed that the Brown Act does apply.
The council also heard a complaint over no-bid contracts and other concerns related to the organization that runs many large civic events. But complaints remain over no-bid contracts for downtown events and other concerns. In 2011, the city approved a partnership with the Downtown El Cajon Business Partners, a planned business improvement district, or PBID, governed by a board of directors. Here's some background information from City Manager Graham Mitchell.
For some background information, back in 2011, the city approved a management agreement between the city and the Downtown El Cajon Business Partners to implement and manage the programs and activities that are funded through an assessment district that property owners in the downtown jurisdictional area pay.
The city provides public funds overseen by the business group for events such as car shows and concerts, as well as keeping the downtown area clean. Kathy Zeman, Chief Financial Officer for the PBID, presented its annual report and asked the city council to accept it, citing building a permanent stage as a key achievement in the past year.
One of our biggest achievements last year was getting a permanent stage built in the promenade. And so now our concerts and other things that happen there have a permanent stage.
But Rich Reel urged council to reject the report. As an East County Chamber of Commerce member and previous subcontractor for music at downtown events, he complained that the PBID has had the same leadership for years, no term limits for its board director, and is awarding no-bid contracts, with only tenants within the district being able to bid on those contracts.
These people have not been termed out, and that they use it like their own piggy bank and they fund their friends.
Reel also announced a victory in court against the Downtown Business Partners, which he had accused of violating the Brown Act by excluding public input at its meetings for the past 10 years. Since the group takes taxpayer money from the city, it is required to follow state open government laws. Reel testified that after open government attorney Corey Briggs filed a lawsuit, quote,
"They have settled with it. Well, we are in the process of settling. They have acknowledged that they have violated the Brown Act, and we are now making sure that they will no longer violate the Brown Act." Okay. So in that respect, I have a small victory for the people.
But Reel wants more changes, including term limits for board members and an open bidding process. Mayor Bill Wells acknowledged that the city has no jurisdiction to enforce proposed Brown Act violations, but agreed that the PBID is subject to open meeting laws. City Manager Graham Mitchell told council that the city has put out a request for proposal, or RFP, and has received two responses. One firm is working on an analysis of the PBID, which should be available for council to review in a couple months, potentially offering alternatives and a pathway for change. Councilman Steve Goble motioned to receive the PBID report without having the council approve it, since he says he has concerns. The motion passed 4-0 with Councilman Gary Kendrick absent.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The county invites you to the Love Your Heart Community Fair at the Ramona Library on Saturday, February 25th from noon to 3 p.m. It's all part of February Heart Health Month. You can learn about heart health and how to control your blood pressure, get your blood pressure checked, and receive a complimentary blood pressure monitor. There will also be food, information booths, naloxone kits to prevent opioid overdoses, and COVID-19 vaccines available. Plus, you can get some exercise on a walk to see the Ramona Heart murals. Again, that's at the Ramona Library, the Love Your Heart Community Fair, this Saturday, February 25th from noon to 3 p.m.
This winter, volunteers counted more than 335,000 Western Monarch butterflies in the annual survey, a big improvement over the last few years, but still far short of historical numbers. Observers only counted 2,000 of the iconic black and orange butterflies in 2020 and then 250,000 in 2021. Rebecca Quinones-Pinon, monarch recovery strategist for the National Wildlife Federation, says that still represents a 90% decline in numbers over the past few decades.
In the late 80s and the early 90s, the count of monarchs was very high, and one of the highest numbers that was recorded was in 1997 with 1.2 million monarchs.
She says experts would need to see an average of 500,000 monarchs over a period of 5 years in order to consider the monarch population stable. In California, the public can visit large clusters of monarch butterflies for a few more weeks at Pismo State Beach, in Pacific Grove near Monterey, and at Natural Bridges in Santa Cruz County. This winter, 250 volunteers conducted the butterfly counts at 272 overwintering sites coordinated by the Xerces Society. The biggest clusters of monarchs were found on private property in Santa Barbara County. Quinones-Pinon says going forward, California needs to work to protect butterfly habitat and continue the fight against global warming.
Habitat loss and fragmentation, which is completely exacerbated by climate change, and the heavy use of pesticides are the three top threats to the monarch butterfly. And that's where we need to focus.
She and other experts say people can do their part by planting butterfly-friendly gardens filled with native nectar plants and native milkweed. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine Radio Show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
An ice storm in January caused major damage to KNSJ's antenna high atop Monument Peak on Mount Laguna, knocking this station off the radio airways. If you're listening to our show today on the internet live stream, please donate to help get us back on the air in San Diego and East County. You can make a donation at knsj.org. And thank you for your support of local nonprofit media. We represent your interests, the public interest, not special interests.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.